As the sporting world starts to reimagine and redesign a return to competitive sport with the safe reintroduction of spectators, Return to Work, Play and Spectate discusses the impact of COVID-19 guidance on safety policy, event management structures, and operations at major international events. Our expert this afternoon is Peter Dalton, an International Protective Security and Incident Command Consultant. Peter delivers command-level training and provides keynote presentations on protective security concepts of operations around the world. He works with international clients to design, develop, and deliver complex readiness and immersive exercises. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Ross. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much for joining us. So here we have it, the Tour de France, 21 stages, over 3,000 kilometers spread across 3 weeks of almost non-stop cycling. It's undeniable that Tour de France is a mega global event. And in any normal year, it takes an extraordinary amount of effort to put on, let alone during a pandemic. So I guess, you know, to kick us off, the first question is, can you give us some idea as to what's involved from a safety and security perspective in hosting what is the largest cycling event in the world?
As you said, Ross, it's quite rightly a global mega event. Some would say it's the largest sporting event in the world. Clearly, it takes place all across France. It's got a national dimension. It's got an international cast of famous racers. 21 stages. On a normal year pre-COVID, I believe 12 million spectators watching the event. The 21 stages, the complexity of the routes, the international profile, all adds to the significance. So what we would say is the safety operation is clearly of international dimension, but delivered primarily by the national infrastructure of France, which is a really highly competent counter-terrorism security capability. So they would have a dedicated lead police officer. That officer is named, if you want to go on the internet. He was performing the role of that senior lead role and will have been involved since the end of last year. And over the last months, this will have been a full-time strategic coordination. A security operation like this would not only involve the French, obviously, gendarmerie, it would involve the Ministry of Interior and the French security agencies, primarily the DGSI and the DGSE. That would be unified. And indeed, again, the police would deploy a very senior police officer in a coordination role to coordinate across the prefectures and regions across France. When we talk about major sporting events, as you know from IIFX, we talk about the three pillars of safety, security and service. So the security operation has to be planned in conjunction with the Tour de France organisers who are delivering the event and in conjunction with many partners who are working towards the safety, security and service. The plan itself, it will be informed by international and national intelligence. There will be an intelligence fusion cell. From that picture, they can get into a detailed Tour de France threat assessment that will build on the ongoing national terrorism threat assessments for France. It will enable them to plan in detail against a range of what we would call reasonable worst case scenarios, and to start to build a security plan that builds through planning, through briefing, through testing and exercising, and then deployment across those 21 stages. Now, each of those stages is an operation in itself. It requires extensive command and control and coordination and event management. So there will be national strategic commands that will link down to the regional commands where the event takes place. And that will be very much multi-agency. So police, fire, ambulance, military, event organisers, the local officials, all working together to make sure the best information is in place. The principles of a security operation like this are based primarily on internationally recognised protective security objectives, which are largely to deter an act of terrorism taking place. It's to detect terrorists and threat actors. It's to delay their activity if they do mount an attack and then to respond accordingly. And that's discharged around layers that would start up framed against the event itself. So if we just take in a route in between the barriers, clearly is the most sensitive part of the operation. So you would see detailed protective security measures, both people, processes and technology combining together. But as you move out past the barrier line, there's layers of security. And there'll be security that you will see, high visibility police and resources from the gendarmes, the CRS, stewards, but also, if you like, covert or undercover policing activity, both in terms of people and technology. Those layers will cascade out from that route into the spectator areas, into the blocks and road closures that move outwards, into the district itself, and then up to a national level. And what that allows the security operation to do is to identify, if you like, hostile threat activity and to respond and plan accordingly. And we really are seeking to, if you like, to deter that activity from terrorists through a multidimensional operation that combines lots and lots of layer of activity. One final point on this would be that the security operation is very much the responsibility of everybody, whether it's police, fire, ambulance, tour organisers, the race teams, spectators, the local communities, and they're all encouraged to work together. And there's lots of ways that, that can be achieved. And very much from the spectator point of view, it's important that the spectator experiences a fantastically safe event, that they feel reassured, and that security they see doesn't inhibit their fan experience whilst attending the event. Clearly, that's far more challenging in the world of COVID-19.
Yeah, so there's a fine balance between, you know, that fan experience and mitigating safety and security threat. The impact of COVID-19 specifically with regards to the tour, but with other sports that you're seeing, there's obviously a lot of modifications going on, redesigning. Can you talk us through some of the impacts that you've experienced, you know, that COVID has already had with regards to mitigating against the safety and security threat?
Yeah, clearly, we all know in the safety and security profession that the event and sporting industry has been massively impacted on by COVID-19. And first of all, as the global pandemic spread, sporting events and events in general stopped. There were various forms of national lockdowns across the world. And then slowly but cautiously, the sporting and event sectors have started to try and redevelop and reimagine new processes that enable safety, security and service to come together. So there's had to be complete consideration to emerging international tournaments and national COVID-19 guidance, applying that guidance to existing national general COVID-19 guidance itself and from the various public health authorities, and then looking at that guidance and seeking to review fundamentally the safety and security policies, its impacts on the event safety management and command and control structures. There are now specific roles for senior managers to manage the implementation and the overlay of security measures and safety measures. It cascades down through a fundamental reimagining of an event management plan and the contingencies that support that. And what we're seeing more of is the COVID-19 consideration, the application is taking up a major share of that planning and delivery process. However, what I would say, and you'll hear us say a lot, is that it has to be integrated through the planning, through the command, through the operational delivery, through the review, to make sure that safety, security and service are all delivered together. One example of a security issue, crowded space events in iconic world locations where there is ready access to big crowds of people, there's international media, they create a terrorist target. And certainly the more iconic the location, the more well-known the event, the more predictability in terms of being able to conduct what we would call hostile reconnaissance or attack planning, the more those threats can become real. So that's a really important consideration. One of the things we have to focus is on crowd management. Now, crowd management clearly is a safety feature in terms of crowd densities and flows and crowd crushings, but also a security feature. And one of the things that a football fan or a sporting fan or a Tour de France fan would experience would be going through layers of high footfall screening and search and pat downs and having their bags checked. Now, clearly, there is a conflict there between maintaining social or physical distance and also reducing the need to manage the risk of transmission. So if you were pre-COVID-19, there would be an active access control and search policy where a sample or a large portion of the crowd may be searched manually by safety officials or police, depending on the policy in the area of operations. Now, clearly, that is not really safe, but it doesn't mean for one second that we can't not have an effective search operation. So there's new guidance on that. An example might be that we implement more screening, whether it's the use of what we would call behavioural detection officers or using undercover officers or using technical measures such as high volume walkthrough metal detectors, and try and be more prescriptive in how we deliver a tactic such as that. Also, trying to make sure one of the principles we work to with security operations is to make sure we can deliver unpredictability. If security is predictable, it's easier for threat actors to counter our protective security. So just trying to be flexible in implementing technology and looking at each part of a security operation, whether it's personal, technological or physical, and applying COVID-19 measures to it. But it's a fascinating area to be involved in.
And I hear from what you're saying, you know, the importance of collaboration across the security sector, you know, in sharing, you know, best practices and then coming up with, you know, better designs for the future. Can you tell us why the Innovation Institute for Found Experience is so important at this time, you know, working with regards to bringing people together under the space to come up with the best solutions possible to get fans back into the stadiums, you know, back at race sides in order to, you know, keep sport at the forefront of communities?
Yeah, sure, very much so. Now, sadly, we live in a world of global terrorism, and over the last few years, I'm sure we'll touch on this shortly, there has been an increase in threats and an increase in terrorist attacks. Now, if you go back 30 years to when I first joined the police service, security was pretty much down to the police in whichever country you operate, or maybe the military. Over the last 30 years, there's been a massive shift to professionalise the private event management of major events and sporting events. So what you have then is a professional body of people who are not police, fire, military or ambulance services running events. And over the last 30 years, and again, it does vary between countries, there is more of a role requirement and in some cases legal obligation for major sporting events to be managed by private security professionals. So if you took, for example, a FIFA World Cup or an IOC Olympic Games, the tournament requirements would say that the host country would have to adopt a host country, host city, host venue concept of operations for security that's integrated and make sure that private security, police law, military, fire and rescue all work together in an integrated way. So what IIFX can definitely do is it can start to bridge the gap between the private event sector and the professional international law enforcement agency community. A little bit like Project Stadia and Interpol that sought to combine the best knowledge and practices across the international policing community of 194 countries and designing training products and knowledge management sharing. My view would be that IIFX can bring together all those agencies and people into a single affiliation and body where they can have access to the best information, the best networks, and really work together to deliver safety and security and service at these large events.
How important do you think the role of technology is going to be in getting fans back into sporting, major sporting events, major entertainment events, indeed major events all over the world?
Whichever walk of life or business you work in, technology always plays a key feature. And just like we talk about the principles of safety, security and service, we talk about people, processes and technology for managing our events. So the principles are the same from a command and control or an event management team down to delivery of an event or sporting competition. Technology will play a key feature. The key thing to say is that technology is there in support of and joined up with other measures. Now, clearly developments in technology in all aspects of protective security. You know, whether it's technology that deals with a vehicle as a weapon threat, or technology that provides high footfall screening at an airport to counter prohibited articles, whether it's explosive detection capability, CCTV cameras, facial recognition. There is so much technology out there. What we would say, though, is in the world of protective security, if you are a security professional working as part of a wider event management team, it's clear that you identify, so from my point of view, the protective security technical effect that you require, and then seek to identify which technology can deliver that and how it will work as part of your wider plans. The second point I'd make is that technology has to be, in an ideal world, certified to an international standard for the role it is going to perform. Now, certainly in the UK, we work to the doctrine from the Centre for Protection of National Infrastructure, the CPNI, and they will maintain a publicly accessible list. I was on there this morning, that lists ranges of technology that's accredited to security standards by sector and by effect. And by doing that, a security professional can make sure that they're using effective equipment rather than just buying emergent technology off the shelf. Over recent years, we've seen an escalation in technology regarding drones or unmanned aerial vehicles. So the counter UAV technology, massive growth in that. And again, some people would say they've got technology that can detect, track, identify, and defeat a drone. In most cases, that's not going to be the case. So an understanding of the capability is important. But where do you get that? No one person can have that depth of knowledge. So it's important, as part of your event management team, you have a senior security coordination role or a security advisory role built into that structure. And they can go and identify effect and advise on the combination and deployment of resources.
And with regards to IIFX, whether you're an individual or whether you're representative of an organization, can you tell us a little bit more about how and why one would want to join the Institute?
I always think that if you are an event professional, now the event professional, the sporting industry, event industry, many, many disciplines within that, whether you are a security professional, a production manager, you know, a transport manager, a planning agent, all working together is so important. One of the good things, I think, from the lockdown period has been the increase in networking. It's been readily apparent. Most days, most people are on webinars, they're doing their own learning, and they're networking through Zoom and other networks. So the first thing, that network capability of IIFX is going to be phenomenal. It will be international. It will be global in its reach. And one of the things that I'm particularly pleased about and passionate about is bringing together law enforcement, which is my former background, and event safety professionals together under one area. So the Institute will give that networking. The next thing it would do, it will enable you anywhere around the world's clock to make contact with a fellow professional. So if you are sat there wondering about a particular area of business, you can go on your network, find a person, have a chat, and people who are on the IIFX, just like other professional bodies, will gladly share information, discuss ideas, and help each other to solve problems. Another great thing to be is the IIFX will have a operational capability in terms of specialist consultancy to organisers and events to help them in their planning process, the delivery of their operations, and making sure their events are as safe as can be possible. And then finally, one of the points, or another key point, is there will be a developing academic and training curriculum that will be focused on all levels of events and command and control for major sporting and general events. Whether you are a new person joining the profession, whether you are an experienced senior manager, whether you are a graduate at university, it will combine evidence-based practice into operational application. And that curriculum is really, really exciting. It will, in due course, we hope, complement and coordinate with Project Stadia and Interpol. And you'll make sure that safety and security professionals are having the very, very best training that's been accredited and certified, so they know when they plan an event they're using the best information, the best training to develop themselves and their staff.
So how much of a surprise was, you know, a global pandemic from a, you know, a risk mitigation perspective, and changing the model and changing the way, you know, that we look at not just physical threats to a stadium, for example, but the threats that would prevent sports fans from getting inside to watch the sports?
I think the principles of a global pandemic have featured on many countries' national risk assessments, if they have a national risk assessment process. So the UK's national risk assessment has had a pandemic type occurrence on there for a number of years. Perhaps the scope and scale and complexity of C19 has overwhelmed the industry, and perhaps the likelihood of a global pandemic and certainly the speed and the impact hasn't been planned for and dealt with effectively on a global stage. So the impact is there. In general threats, when we plan a major global sporting event, and I'll stick with a sporting event such as the Olympics or a World Cup for now, there are tournament requirements for the host country to have a comprehensive national risk assessment and threat assessment, and that they combine all of their security and safety infrastructure at a national level, coupled with international cooperation to consider an all hazards approach. So what we don't want to do is to focus going forward solely on COVID-19, because hopefully that will pass and we'll return to a new form of operations. And I believe that COVID-19 will pass in due course. What we need to do is to think about all the hazards, all the threats. When we talk about hazards, we're talking about health and safety, we're talking about weather-related incidents, we're talking about structural collapse. When I talk about threats, I'm talking about malicious threats such as terrorism, crime, protest of a disruptive nature that's not peaceful, and matters like that. So what we should do is consider all of those processes. We need to have a systematic risk management process that can be dynamic, it can be applicable to the events, and it can seek to identify, analyze and evaluate all of those different threats and hazards, and then treat them effectively so that you can run your events to the safest possible manner. In terms of terrorism, we have to focus on reasonable worst case scenarios. Now, since 2014 and into 2015, there's been an increase in international terrorism. Whilst we won't comment on the genre of that today, if we look at France as an example, so January 2015, Charlie Hebdo, from a Monday to Friday, there was a complex terrorist attack that involved assault rifles. First of all, an attack at the newspaper's offices. It led to the two primary threat actors being on the run, leading to an international manhunt. It then led to an attack in the Jewish supermarket in Paris on the Friday, where the French GIGU and security forces successfully interdicted. Roll forward through that into November 13th, 2015, that international terrorist act that started off on the Stade de Paris with attempted suicide devices. It then moved into a complex and marauding attack into the centre of Paris, the theatre district, finished in the Bataclan theatre with hostage taking, led to a massive amount of death and injury. Assault rifles being used, explosive devices, teams of threat actors, highly mobile. It showed us how terrorism had changed into, if you like, internationally directed terrorism, enabled terrorism, and certainly inspired terrorism. What we then see again in France, if we go forward to July the 14th, 2016, Bastille Day, we saw a vehicle as a weapon attack in Nice, driving along the Rue du Anglais in a 19-ton truck. And then we've seen since then attacks around the world of a lesser extent of a complex nature, but an increase in what we would call low complexity, low sophistication attacks. And they would seek to target iconic locations, crowded places, major events, where there's a gatherings of people, high numbers of security visible, media on hand, and seek to mount attacks that are easy to plan and hard to detect. And at the moment, we're seeing attacks using knives or edge weapons, attacks using improvised explosive devices such as Manchester Arena in 2017. A lot of attacks using vehicles or weapon driven into a crowd to cause casualties. Firearms, depending on access to firearms or combinations of those. And happening and occurring on a large, large scale, most countries will have thousands of subjects of interest who they have to manage. And building up to a major event or a major sporting event, it has to be international and national cooperation, using all of the available counterterrorism infrastructure, working together to try and prevent those attacks taking place. And then, as we say, working on principles of deterring, detecting, disrupting, mitigation and response. If those events do take place, having the capability and capacity to respond extremely quickly. And that's where there's been a massive increase in that capability. So if you take the general law enforcement agencies of the world, after Paris 2015, it was a groundbreaking moment. So certainly in the UK, where I was based as a police officer, working in Specialist Firearms Command, we would increase our general armed policing capability. We would deploy more armed officers on foot patrol and in vehicle patrol at sporting and crowded place events. We developed our counter-terrorism capability. So in France, you would have units such as GIGU or the raid teams. You're making them more mobile, they're better equipped, there's more resources. You are developing your liaison with military, fire and ambulance. You're working to, in the UK, we would call it the Joint Emergency Services Interoperability Principles, working together to manage these threats. Thankfully, attacks on major events are rare, but they will always remain that threat. And if you are planning a major international event, it has to be at the forefront of your planning. There has to be a detailed concept of operations. And what we should have to do as protective security professionals is really to contribute to and develop those national strategies that address those key risks, and then work together to build integrated concepts of operations, which is a grand term for joined up planning between the safety, security and service to make sure the events pass off successfully.
Peter, thank you very much indeed. It's been fascinating talking to you today on all of these subjects, and certainly looking forward to the rest of the Tour de France and hopefully a very smooth completion of the event.
Thank you.